in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A fighting is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any way that you can see us with your grin. Listening head and skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I've got a trivia question for you.
What's that, Nick?
Well, what do you think was the biggest difference in the heights of Richmond players that Eddie Maguire got confused on the weekend?
I was not expecting that question. What was it?
Well, there was a very strong entry early on when he got Kane Lambert and Camden McIntosh confused, and then they're a good half a foot difference. But he managed to top himself a little bit later on when he got Todd Elton, you know, a near ruck size centre half forward, confused with Georgie Castagna.
Yeah, that was quite impressive. It's infuriating when you lead and the commentators talk up the comeback so much to get the listeners to keep watching, viewers to keep watching the game. But I think when we were still three goals down, the commentator said, "El Clásico is brewing." Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was a low-scoring, dire game that actually had an exciting finish. But that in no way was that game a classic game of football.
No, it was a bit of a Ross Lyon special, and it unfortunately highlighted some of the weaknesses in our style of play at the moment. And it is, look, the positive to it is that if you're comparing this year with last year, that last year was four quarters of unrelenting dirge, whereas this year at least we're throwing in the odd wildly exciting quarter, and up until the last 20 seconds of the game, that would have been a classic finish, but wasn't meant to be.
Okay, so people are sick of hearing about the game, particularly about the last 30 seconds, which has been
it's been analysed to death. I must say I thought the Age article where they analysed how it all happened, as excruciating as it was to watching somebody take one of your fingernails off with a pair of pliers and then forcing you to watch the video of it on replay. It was a good piece of analysis, so I don't think there's anything particularly to add there. And the solution for me, and perhaps I'm on the extreme in this opinion, but the solution to winning close games, and pretty certain, all the evidence is that these things even out over time, and there's a large amount of luck, and the solution to being a really good team is to beat teams by a lot so that you're not prone to bouts of bad luck in the last 30 seconds. So,
I agree with that entirely, and I'm just going to go on my rant for the game.
Yeah.
To me, the closer...
The solution is to play better, not to be in a one goal game in the last minute
against a mediocre team playing away. I mean, we had five goals to three quarter time playing against the ninth best defense in the AFL, and Dimmer once again, and coming into the fourth quarter once again, Dimmer, because for whatever reason the match committee comes down and picks three defenders for every attacker it needs. In if you look at team balance, we were trying to come down from a five-goal deficit, and we had Jade Batchelor, who's never played full forward in his life, as far as I know, at full forward, and Todd Elton in our forward 50. Like, that was a fundamental failure of game plan, because Dimmer once again thinks of every way to defend a goal and not enough ways to kick a goal. So once again, for the fourth year in a row, we're mediocre scorers and good defenders, and Dimmer gets up. Against the Adelaide game, he's always talking about defence and stopping goals, but he gets trapped in this mindset where he's always trying to beat teams that if they kick 10 or 11 goals, we're stuffed. because his ultimate goal is to win a game 60-70, and that's fine if you can keep your team to 60. It's really, really hard in the AFL. Sometimes you need to bloody kick a goal, and he's stuck in this mindset, and he's a 45% winning coach for a reason. Oh, sorry, it's win percentage. And frankly, if I never have to see another Damien Hardwick coach dirge like that, I will be happy. Having said that, we're not without a chance against GWS, but to me, the close finish is a distraction.
It does take two. Like it, I mean, Todd Elton was in forward 50 because we don't have a better alternative, and that.
And that makes me angry about how the team was managed. The only thing that makes me is feel slightly sorry for Dimia, but only equally as angry that we could have played the cheapest chips in our bottom of the deck, in the off season. And, you know, we didn't pick up a replacement level forward better than bloody Todd Elton, who, in fairness, as fans, we didn't know how bad he was because we hadn't seen him play.
Well, it's the challenge of, the team has been reasonably good about not having these anchor contracts that stop you from, getting a bit of depth at the bottom of the list. Because the problem was, you know, and I was looking at this on the weekend, that James Stewart from the Gold Coast, now, he's only... went from GWS to Essendon, played his first game on the weekend and kicked a couple of goals. Now that, he's only played one game, so you wouldn't call him a saviour, but, you know, that's...
A couple more goals on Todd Elton has kicked five games.
Goals on Todd Elton has for the season, yeah. But the problem with guys like that is that when you get them from another club, you have to give them a multi-year contract. And you've only got... When you get a couple of those guys on the list, they squeeze out room for the other ones. So if you've got Todd Elton on a multi-year contract, you know, it limits your ability to get somebody else to replace him, which is unfortunately the issue with both Morris and Elton this year. Townsend is the other one you can say is... a bit of superfluous death, but he's been playing well in the VFL, so I can cope with that one. But yeah, it does. You know, you can have these guys at the bottom of the list, but you only get so many goes at them, and when you give them a multi-year contract, you know, it stops you getting somebody better. And unfortunately, you know, Todd Elton's our fourth best key forward, and he's really not very good.
He's terrible, and it tells you so much revealed preference about how we've preferenced our end of... I mean, we are talking about the last people on the list, so we should caveat here that you're not talking about your aces. But, you know, we have two guys in their late 20s, sorry, in their mid... older than 25, who are not in our starting 22, who are back pockets. Now, back pockets is one of the easiest positions to fill, and yet... we're loading up in VFL depth on it. You know, why would you spend your chips there when, you know, you can always find a young buck to fill in and, you know, plug the hole briefly, unless you're prioritizing your halfback flanks and back pockets higher than perhaps, you know, having more than one option than your injury-prone centre-half forward, who, by the way, isn't that good anyway. Anyway, we're getting into list management here and we're getting off the game.
It is part of the problem of the game of just too many passengers. Like I think you're a little bit harsh in assessment of Fremantle. Like Fremantle, that form that we saw on the weekend with Fife playing well, Sandilands playing well, you know, Brad Hill up and about, and they play the MCG well. They're four out of their last five there. They're a very solid mid-table team. And we have to play well,
but the defense isn't what it was. They now do get goals kicked against them, and we couldn't get goals.
They do, but they're still the strength of the team is now the midfield, and it's still a pretty good midfield.
Go.
Yeah, and Ross, you complain about Dimmer having a defensive mindset. Ross Lyon, you know, was playing with an extra man behind the ball for almost the entire game,
Ross Lyon can do what he wants because he's actually won finals. He's got, and he's got a winning record as a coach. Dimmer has none of those things. He's also, habitually defensive. And this isn't just like Fremantle game. Yeah, there's four weeks in a row we've won. So we've gone for the first few weeks of the season. We went from fast attacking play on football. And now for the last 4 weeks, we're 17th in the AFL, playing on for a mark. And yeah, we're now 18th and 8th.
Because we've stopped, we're not winning it in the contest nearly as much. We're not getting in a situation to be able to play on. Like, I still think that we're still playing through the corridor more, and we're trying to play on when we can. But there's not the opportunities aren't as there unfortunately.
We're not trying very hard, and we've got 18th in retention in the AFL for inside 50s. Our inside 50 retention is now our forward line is completely dysfunctional. But meanwhile, we've still got the priority in last week's selection was let's bring in another guy who can stop a goal. Jade Batchelor, and actually played quite well to his limited ability. I loved his defensive pressure. So we took a brief interlude to argue the pros and cons of dragging Dimmer through.
Not all that brief.
Dragging Dimmer through down Swan Street so he could be pelted with rotten vegetables by angry members of the Richmond online community, or Nick's view of a more moderate temperate response. But we thought it was actually not very...
the internet is not a kind place to those of us of a moderate temperament.
So we thought it wasn't a constructive argument when we're shouting at each other, that's an irrelevant stat, worst coach ever!
That's a tautology.
Obviously, those two people weren't saying, one person wasn't saying the same thing. Moving on.
I've got a couple of things from the game.
Yeah, exactly. What
talk about?
What impressed you? What stood out to you other than the finish?
Well, perhaps standing out is the wrong word, but things I noticed, like I do. We are heavily anchor dependent. The difference in the last quarter when Nank was getting heavily involved. Look, he's never going to win the Sanderlands hitouts, but he's got to be good at what he's good at. He's good at intercept marking. He's number one in the league for ruckman for intercept marks. He's good at clearances. He's good at tackles. And for a couple of quarters, he went missing. And then, you know, in the last quarter, he was heavily involved. He was dominating when the ball hit the ground. Made a world of difference, and that's he's a strengths and weaknesses kind of guy, but it did show how valuable those strengths are when they're going well. The other not so hot take I had was that does Wayne Campbell from 1995 want his hair back when he sees Daniel Rioli run around?
I think if you're to have a hair off, I think Daniel's is better. I think Wayne's always looked a bit greasy.
Yeah, probably so. But do you think era adjusted that's a reasonable comparison?
Well, are you saying hair is in general is better in our generation?
I think the mid 90s was as you know a very fine time for long hair. So look, I'm supportive of Daniel's efforts, but it did recall a kindler, more innocent time for me for hirsute Richmond players.
Yes, and I just make quickly a serious point about Rioli is our comeback was not a small part due to the fact that he cameoed again in the last quarter. Which
I know. Look, we've been fretting about slightly injured ankle the last couple of weeks, and God, it made such a difference when he was up and about. Like he's the face that runs the place in our forward line, other than Jack.
Yeah, particularly when you're attempting a miracle comeback, he's one of the first people, not the first, but he'd be in the first 20 guys you'd pick in the AFL.
Oh yeah. Look, I actually wanted to. Do you remember we talked about last week when I said the Jaden Short decision was just a catastrophic, was a you know, there's the difference between an umpiring mistake when they're in the wrong position versus a brain fart. This week we had an umpire in the wrong position mistake, and it cost us a goal at the end of the third quarter, sadly. Because, you know, normally the accepted practice is that as long as the player being shepherded doesn't actually die in the contest, they normally allow the goal. But umpire was in the wrong spot, Fremantle player, exaggerated contact. Yeah, he called the wrong decision.
Jack doesn't get calls. I mean, sometimes he does because he's in a lot of contests, but...
He initiates a lot of contact.
But, you know, my Homer interpretation is that Jack does not get the benefit of the doubt.
No, not as much as he should. And, yeah, that was a mistake, sadly.
It's a pity, actually. I was sort of looking forward to you becoming an umpire apologist. So you've semi-criticised them 2 weeks in a row now, so...
No, it is, like... And from having done it, like I've literally, I've said to guys, look, guys, sorry, I was just on the wrong side of the contest, and I didn't say it, and it makes such a difference. If you're, and for people watching at home, the umpire training is that they should be side on to the contest. If you're front on, guys can lunge forward when they feel contact at the back and draw easy free kicks. If you're side on, they can't fool you like that. And that's how you tell when umpires are on the top of the game.
That's all good analysis, but I'm going to, you are now capped. The amount you can talk about umpiring for the next 3 weeks on the podcast.
you're gonna allow me an extra 30 seconds just to say how impressive it is that we have our first female field umpire, because those guys and now girl, they are elite middle distance runners. Like I've seen the requirements of how long and how fast they have to be able to run to play as an AFL field umpire, and they are genuine, being able to compete in state based athletics, middle distance running athletes, and that's how good you have to be even before you learn all the rules. So yeah, that's a pretty impressive effort.
I could not disagree with that. I think it's a good point. And as I said, I'm now at my peak for interest in umpiring for at least short term.
If I can add one more thing, when everybody says the AFL is making it an impossible game to umpire, yep, yeah, they're right as well.
All right, maybe we could start a second podcast about umpiring decisions.
Well, actually, let's talk more about perhaps not the big takeaways, but some of the small takeaways from the game. But you're a connoisseur of detail as well. But have you appreciated the fact that Camden McIntosh has actually got competent at spoiling the ball this year?
Yes. And once again, by the way, I'm a Camden McIntosh bandwagon. Look who's running strongly and breaking contests in the fourth quarter.
He's nearly tripled the number of spoils he's making per game. Like he wasn't particularly good at it.
Yeah.
You know, he could still get a little bit better, but he has got noticeably better at it. And the other things that he was always good at being a strong physical body at the contest, I reckon he's cleaned up his disposal. I mean, we've always been team Camden, but he's a guy who's addressing some of the small weaknesses in his game. So yeah, I'm happy with him.
Someone who got dropped and came back from the VFL and actually seems to have got better. Moving on. I don't have much else to say about the game. I'm deliberately in denial about it, frankly, because it hurts me to think about it. Is there any other individual effort you want to highlight?
Oh, look, it would be remiss not to pay tribute to how good Dusty is on the top of his game. Like, you know, people pointing out it was his opponent at the centre bounce. Yeah, like most elite players, he is not a particularly good defensive player, but you know he remains a force of nature and is a joy to watch. I mean, I
He's not an elite center square player. What he is if you're in the fourth quarter and the ball's on the half forward flank, he's almost, you know, top player in the AFL you want near the contest.
Yeah. He's impossible to tackle, and he's impossible to, you know, people 8 centimetres taller and 10 kilos heavier can't deal with him in a marking contest. Like, it feels unfair how much better than they are in those contests. And yeah, I mean, he's still the drums were beating that he was about to resign, and then, you know, Caroline Wilson, who's always the first and best source for Richmond gossip, said that Ralph Carr was still touting him around. You know.
I don't know. I found those drums not very credible, but unfortunately came from a journalist who's very close to the club. So I heard it
from another place as well that was a little more credible. But look,
a little bit less wishful thinking, you think? Not just wishful thinking.
I think they had a period where the talks were going well, but I do think Ralph Carr doesn't have a lot of clients, so he is making sure he extracts every last dollar, which, you know, we've seen before is his prima facie operating, and it is.
Yeah, I went through the blaming Ralph Carr thing, and last contract I'm okay with this. I was okay with blaming the player that I don't.
No, I'm not blaming him. He's doing his job. He's trying to, you know, more so than a lot of guys. Dustin, you know, perhaps has Gary Ablett's perhaps the best comparison in terms of, you know, Gary Ablett is virtually, if you read the stuff online, he's the only member of his family with a functional job. And you know, Dustin Martin doesn't come from an easy background. I don't begrudge their agents extracting every last dollar out of a short football career. As a fan, it's not much fun to be on the sideline as that plays out.
No, I couldn't agree more with both those points. But Dusty's had his choice about what kind of management negotiation style his manager has, and he stuck with it, which is, you know, fair play to him. So
people still expect him to resign, but of the clubs that are rumoured to be chasing him, you know, I've done a little bit of research about what sort of trade we'd want to extract from them. So, you know, that's where I sit right now.
I mean, we covered this earlier in the year for the people who didn't see the podcast. There is, without repeating it, there is a scenario where you actually don't want to keep Dusty.
Well, it's the... having thought about it some more, it's the scenario is the Dangerfield scenario. In Dangerfield, Adelaide threatened to match the contract offer he got from another team and use that to extract an extra player and an extra pick out of the team they were dealing with. So not a great player, like Dean Gore was the player who, you know, has done nothing, but, you know, there's... You know, the parameters of what a deal looks like have been established.
Can we get the bit where Adelaide drafted and developed their players brilliantly as well?
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
You know, there's no arguing about that. Look, if there was, you know, the match committee's feelings about, you know, we only lost by a goal, but the frustration with the number of players in the team, I think, was evident by the four unforced changes, which we'll get to in a minute. But was there anyone else from the game that you wanted to cover?
No, but moving on to the VFL, unless there's anything else you...
Well, I had one more. I don't... Just take a little moment to appreciate, you know, Jack's a very good forward, and I think he's perhaps doesn't get enough credit for how smart he is. Because I noticed at one point in the last quarter, you know, not only did he have the fantastic sequence where he missed a shot that he should have got, but then he backed it up, and you know, you knew he was taking the next shot, and he made it. Like, that was a really good response. But also that he, at one stage in the last quarter, he deliberately turned onto his non-preferred foot. Like, he is so comfortable off both feet that he can turn both ways. He's no Zoolander.
Agreed.
Well, before we get to the VFL, we sort of, I don't think a lot of people realised that we had sort of something of a, you know, in the murky world of player recruitment, we had a new record established this week.
Mm-hmm.
So the first sort of public acknowledgement of our interest in another player and having met with their management. The previous record that I could find was Ivan Maric back in 2011, in about July, when he was running around in the SANFL and able to get a game ahead of Sam Jacobs. But we met with the management for Josh Shackey this week, you know, laying bare to the world that how interested we are. So, yeah, he's not having a great year. He's a big key forward in his second year, so expectations need to be taken with a big grain of salt. But yeah, the life cycle for players is speeding up faster and faster every year.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, the Shanky rumours are becoming so persistent, and like it's,
well, we publicly acknowledged meeting with his management. Like, we've it's unusual for clubs used to go through all this charade of denying this, but it's getting more and more open. It's not at the stage of the NRL where they're actually signing for another club in April, but yeah,
I see what you're saying. Getting faster and faster. I see what you're saying, and it is unique, the situation. What I was going to say was, like, we've known about the Shacky rumour through the old-fashioned informal way for so long now.
Yeah. It's been a couple of months. It's just that it's gone public earlier than I expected.
And our second forward is so bad. It's just, I'm trying not to think about it too much, because it's just, you know, it's too early in the season to be focusing on the off-season.
And look, I know you mentioned the VFL, but in sort of we've got almost opposite situations now of, you know, the two high profile off season targets being Josh Shackey and Patrick Naish. They're very much going in opposite directions in terms of their form line.
Yes, but luckily for Shackey, he plays a high demand, low supply position.
Well, and he was the second pick in the draft 18 months ago, so, you know, he gets a certain amount of benefit of the doubt. But yeah, he's been dropped to the NEFL this week, which tells for a side that's not travelling very well. So yeah, he's not having a great year. Patrick Naish, on the other hand, kicked 7 goals for Ivan O'Grammer on Friday, and yeah, I'm always slightly, I'm not sure how, you know, I certainly enjoy that there's more and more draft coverage these days, but that school football is now being regularly reported on the internet, and, you know, Xavier Naish is a 15 going on 16 year old, and I'm finding out about his week by week performance. Yeah, that's both a good thing, but it's slightly scary as well.
Yeah, I'd just say about that I once heard a recruiter say the only people who care about school football are people in the schools. The standard's too low to be relevant, but it's nice that we know about these things.
And I'm still the dream scenario for me is that you know, we've got 2 first round draft picks, you know, should the season go badly scenario, and Dusty wants to leave, we end up with 3 first round draft picks. The big hope for me is for Patrick Naish to be a early second round draft pick, such that, you know, we can use some later picks to get him and use those high picks to load up some tall players. Hope for the best, plan for the worst.
That is it's quite revealing where your head's at the moment.
Well, I do. It's a gentle pump of the brakes that Patrick Naish is getting a fair bit of media love. But as you said when you spoke to some recruiters, you know, that a few weeks ago, that, you know, he's playing good footy, but he's still a second round draft
pick. He'd have to radically improve in his status to be considered a legitimate guy.
The big test is always national championships, which are coming up, and, you know, Yeah, he's got a chance to go either way.
I mean, people do forget, I'm getting so far off the point, but that recruiters see an awful lot of footballers who never make the AFL, like even seeing someone who's an AFL potential 50-game player for in the AFL is quite exciting and does generate some exciting, you know, is notable in genius.
Oh, yeah. And look, there is... Look, we're talking about Patrick Naish because he is a genius. You know, we have standards on this show, so we, you know, he's a genuine AFL prospect. And unfortunately, Zach Knights, Paddy Turner, Bailey Lambert, you know, all sons of famous players. You know, they're all 18-year-old this year, and unfortunately, they don't look like being good enough to be draftable. You know, Josh Broderick. As well, perhaps the closest of that group, but yeah, then, you know, if we're talking about them, they are legitimate, serious AFL prospects. You know, it's you know, and as I said, national championships, they're a big deal. So if he has a really good carnival, maybe he can be a first round draft pick. But yeah, as of right now, he's not. But yeah, take the hype with a grain of salt.
On the other hand, we're not necessarily incentivised for him to have a great carnival. Moving on.
No. Well, I've heard that he really likes partying and he's been hanging out with Dane Swan.
I hear it. Really? I heard that Dane Swan dropped him because he was a bad influence. And I hear he hates all other 17 AFL clubs. And possibly wants to give up football to become a Mormon, traveling Mormon missionary, while also being a smack addict. Anyway, moving on.
And taking performance enhancing drugs.
Oh, and he hates authority, hates cliches, talks honestly to the media, particularly about his injuries.
Oh, yeah. And about his feelings about the coach. He talks about his real feelings about the coach.
And the game plan. Discusses openly game plan. Oh, and who on the other team he doesn't like. Loves talking about that. Anyway.
And on his own team.
Yes. I'm going to ask the VFL question a bit of a different way since we're doing this the Thursday podcast and it's a bit old hat now, the VFL. Based on what happened in the VFL, do you think they got the? Are you happy with the selection, or should we just cut to the chase and talk about Shai Bolton?
Oh, look, I'm totally pumped about Shai Bolton's debut. I'm both excited and scared and frightened about playing. I think we're playing Ivy Junior at first ruck.
Well, this is actually
that makes the most sense.
This is the most interesting bit of this week for me. Considering it is unlikely we're going to sack the coach midweek, when we've got a winning record, do we play, like, which way do you go? Do you play Nank forward and Ivy in the ruck? That would the way I would naturally go. But Ivy has been playing forward, and, you know, like, Elton's been so bad, do you just, like, Ivy Junior, your job is just to be there down the line and wave your arms around and create a contest. You could go either way, but I think you're right. Well, I think we both think the same way. That the Nank's more, the centre half forward traditionally is a harder position to play, so you put your better player there, your more coordinated player there. And also he's a better ruck, whereas Ivy Junior's, Nank's more versatile, whereas Ivy Junior's more a pure ruck. So it makes sense to me, but I wouldn't be shocked if they went the other way.
Well, I think, Ivy Junior will ruck for for a good portion of the first three quarters. I think maybe Nank, we go small in the last quarter when everyone's tired and the game opens up a bit.
Because we haven't been playing Alton anyway in the last quarter.
And it's sort of easier, it's a bit easier to go small. You know, it's a GWS have a really good ruck combination in Mumford and Loeb, and you know, sort of Mumford's a bit like the super Nank, or perhaps, you know, Nank with a few more years and you know, a bit more core strength, but
yeah,
and Loeb is the same size as Ivy, but with a football background and super coordinated, so yeah, it's a tough matchup, but look, I'm so There was a 10-minute period in the first quarter this week when Todd Elton was clunking big contested marks. But yeah, he hasn't kicked a goal at all.
Hasn't kicked a goal. Missed another good shot. Yeah. His possession count is so low. It's
His ruck work doesn't kind of sucks as well. The question for me from the VFL was Lennon or Lloyd, and you know I would, you know, from a blank sheet of paper I prefer Lennon, but Lloyd's been playing really well for a month.
Yeah, I don't mind.
I'm happy to give him a go. I'm genuinely excited about Shai Bolton. He's perhaps got the biggest vertical leap of anyone in the team, actually, along with Shane Edwards, surprisingly enough. He's been playing. He's a skinny flanker. He's probably a little bit too small for AFL, but he's fast. He can jump. When he's motivated, he can tackle. He wins a fair amount of football. He probably needs to tidy up his disposal, and he's not a huge goal kicker. But you know, I think he's got a chance to be genuinely exciting. And, you know, a little bit of excitement is probably what we need to get us through some of these games.
Okay, so I agree with you, and agree with many other people who
bet. Well, and also that with Butler being injured, it was either him or Stengel, and their form line's probably about the same, but I'm okay with erring on the guy who is an elite athlete, because you know Bolton is, you know, he's a slightly different athlete to Dan Rioli, but he's in that caliber of athlete, and that's pretty good fun.
I'm not surprised they went with Bolton, not because of the form line, which you could debate either way, as I think we discussed last week, but the thing about Bolton is he's the quicker one, so and one of the key things that the three smalls bring is forward half pressure, and Shai will be better than that. And he does drop the old big tackle, and you know, at AFL level where the athleticism is even more important, it made sense to me why Shai got picked when.
Stengel has very good tackling technique, but
you got to get to the contest, which is harder in AFL.
Yeah, he does, and he closes space, and he's surprisingly good overhead for a guy who's 5'8".
Had Butler not been injured and they would just bring... So one thing about this team... by the way, on the Shai thing, I'd just say, even though he tested well for endurance and draft camp, it was nice. He was killing the VFL. He hasn't played that much footy. Only played 2 or 3 games. Mm. He was killing the VFL in the first quarter, had a very high possession count, and then sort of just slightly more than doubled his possession count for the next 3 quarters. I wouldn't be surprised if he flakes out at the end of this game, which is fine. First game player, but
yeah.
It's just the downside of playing Shai. But we'll wait and see. The bigger point,
I'm happy to have him in the team.
I couldn't agree more, and I'm with basically everyone else on the official and unofficial media who's very excited about it. I don't think I've heard anything but excitement. Just slightly, if you look at the way the balance of the team has gone, it has slightly reduced
a lot of forward flankers now.
The flotilla of backflank. So if you just quickly do the count, Connor Menadue, a direct swap for Corey Ellis. But basically, I'll cut to the chase. Basically, having both Sam Lloyd and Shai Bolton in the team, we only dropped one true small forward in that exchange. So we picked up an extra small genuine goal kicker. So the balance has slightly shifted back more to what we had in round one.
Yeah, I think Shai, but Bolton's been able to spend a bit of time in midfield productively for the VFL.
We'll see. I mean, he might be up playing on the wing a bit, but I think he's there to play high half forward. Anyway, I think the point still holds that the attacking defending balance has slightly shifted. And Dio Prestia has had a very quick return from his hamstring, which isn't helping the conspiracy theories, but you know, whatever, I'm glad he's back. I can play as well.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm still team knee-related hamstring, but, yeah, I'm glad he's back. And, look, he's the, you know, he's a very good footballer who's had a very average year. Like, you know, Josh Caddy's probably 5% off his previous efforts, but, you know, it's the ballpark. Like, it's a reasonable output for who he is. Dan Prestia hasn't been this bad since he's been a teenager. So, you know, you can only hope and expect that he's better than he is, because otherwise it asks some pretty profound questions about due diligence. But yeah, we really need him to play better. That a contested ball is a you know, is a huge barometer of us as a team. And yeah, and looking to this opponent, look, the scouting GWS is a truly unique experience. Like, you can tell they've got a long injury list when they actually have to play people in their team who aren't a first round draft pick. Because the normal GWS team has one player, Zach Williams, who was not either recruited from another club, or was a top 20, if not, well, top 20 draft pick other than Rory Loeb. Like, they are a team of thoroughbreds, and they're so injury decimated, they now have two rookie players on their team. So they are, they bleed. They can be beaten, but they are a very good team.
Mm. I mean, they're, and,
you know, they're, we are deserved substantial underdogs for this game.
As you said, they bleed, obviously, last week's result. If ever we're going to beat them, it's going to be this week. But Team AFL is still incredibly deep. And, you know, we're not actually meant to beat them.
Oh, yeah. They played in a preliminary final last year and still had three top 20 draft picks.
I would still bet on
it's pretty scary.
In the grand final quite comfortably when they get all the players back. Good luck to Lids, who's rehabilitating. I hope he plays, and, you know, his time is good.
And actually, the, you know, when, you know, in the ups and downs of a long football season, I must say I am taking genuine pleasure when Geelong lose.
Tommy has come back, so misses playing against Richmond. We should just mention.
Yeah, I would have that the first time he does play against Richmond, that won't be easy. Look, it softens the blow knowing we've got two draft picks for him, but yeah, him seeing him play against Richmond would be hard.
If it's a meaningful game, it'll hurt. If it's a meaningless game, I'll be fine with it.
It did. It's emotionally, it's always going to be hard. For me, look. There is the low point. We've already had the low point. Like, if Lids wins a flag, I'm fine with that, because we've seen how dignified Richo was when he had to interview Mitch Mort, Premiership winner.
Yeah, and underrated flaw was Robbie Nahas playing quite well for against us in the North Melbourne final. But people don't remember finals as well as they remember grand finals.
It's the premiership medal that really.
That I find chaps.
So how optimistic are you feeling about this week?
I like that we're not trying to win by keeping the score 50-60. Wait and see.
We'll wait and see if
Dion Prestige is vaguely near something like what we hoped we'd getting, that'll make a huge difference. But I think the rest of the changes are helpful, but not inspirational. But yeah, fighting chance. We should just quickly mention Conker as well, by the way, that it looks like he'll be out for quite a while, if not the season. I did hear that we bagged them for how they listed in the injury report, but I think the club, in fairness to the club doctors, they did say that he was being assessed and a few weeks ago, and you know the assessment was bad, and unfortunately he's going to be out for a while. So Rhys Conker, whew, we've never heard this before. A bit unlucky with injury, but I think this time this is almost his worst injury, because I think this was, I know there's a case to be made that 2013 he was decent, it wasn't 14, whatever it was, but I think this was the best footy he was ever playing. So again, great pity.
Oh, look, he had a really good first 6 weeks of the season, but yeah, this was the big turnaround. He was playing well. Yeah, genuinely disappointing. And
so, are you feeling better?
All the best as ever. Look, okay, let's hope for the best. Oh, look, I'm putting myself in an emotional cocoon about it. I'm somewhat in awe of GWS. As a team and as a construction by the AFL, so I'm pessimistic.
Well, we'll see.
It's that time of the week when I'm always pessimistic.
I just want us to be enthusiastic about this game than I was about watching football after the first three quarters of last week. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and I'm already a bit pumped about having Shai Bolton.
We didn't mention Shai, but he was okay.
Dan Rioli for Dreamtime the week after. Yeah. Oh, particularly in the last quarter.
I'm Andy.
It's good to have him back. I hope he plays more consistently this week. I'm Nick. See you next time.